Decisions about how soon global carbon emissions reach a peak and how quickly they then decline will be made not in Canberra, but in Delhi, Moscow, Washington, Brussels, and above all, Beijing. Accounting for about 3% of global emissions, including our fossil fuel exports, or less than 1% counting only our domestic emissions, Australia may once have had the opportunity to show global leadership, but that time has passed. Even if the world were to reduce greenhouse gas emissions quickly, elevated levels of carbon dioxide already in the atmosphere will keep global temperatures high for centuries. Slow processes like melting ice masses, thawing tundra, and rising sea levels are in effect irreversible once they begin. And there are signs that some tipping points may have already been breached. What humans have done and will do over the century 1950 to 2050 will change the way the Earth functions for many thousands of years. And yet debate in Australia over climate policy is built on an implicit belief that what we do in this country to reduce our emissions will affect the climate Australians will be living through in 50 and 100 years hence. The Labor government's climate policy, for instance, is promoted as a plan to secure our nation's future, as if it could make a discernible difference to Australia's climate. As long-term observers of the climate change debate, we are impressed by the tenacity of wishful thinking and the commitment by so many to implausible solutions belied by the facts, with the seemingly indestructible faith in carbon capture and storage the most striking example. To this has been added new articles of faith, notably hydrogen and electrification, as we'll explain. These solutions, emanating from reputable sources, yet at times verging on the magical, are put forth both as official government policy and as radical schemes advanced by experts. Among the latter, the crash decarbonisation schemes advocated by Ross Garnaut, Alan Finkel and Saul Griffith have dazzled the public with their promise of a golden green future for Australia. Regrettably, they each turn out to be beyond what is feasible and plausible, certainly in the timeframes proposed and with unwelcome side effects. Our concern is that the hopeful mood generated by the Labor government's partial decarbonisation policy, one that overpromises, neglects important emission sources, undervalues energy efficiency and fails to build in resilience, that policy is lulling the public into a false sense that enough is being done to make a difference to our future climate. For the minority who understand the urgency of global decarbonisation, we are worried that the ambitious crash decarbonisation schemes of the experts are distracting us from what we really should be doing. We're concerned that those schemes would do lasting damage to aspects of the natural environment that we will value even more as our climate shifts. If cutting our emissions in Australia can have no appreciable effect on global heating, should we just go for broke with fossil fuels? No, of course not. There are good reasons why Australia should continue to cut emissions, even if the usual arguments that the world will be inspired by our example or that we can pioneer clean energy technologies for export aren't plausible. It's the right thing to do. In the first place, we've been free riding for far too long. Cutting emissions still gives us a bit of credibility on the international stage, and cutting emissions, the clean energy revolution, is in our economic interests, because without rapid adoption of clean energy technology, our industries would quickly become outdated. As we'll explain, if cutting Australia's emissions can have no appreciable effect on the global climate, Australia can make important contributions to the world by pursuing the strategy we describe in this book. Firstly, by developing and exporting world-leading adaptation technologies, especially in agriculture and related industries, we can help poor countries protect themselves from the ravages of climate change. Secondly, by protecting our continent's unique and precious species and ecosystems, we will be safeguarding the world's heritage. In this book, we make the case for rebalancing our priorities to put much more emphasis on preparing Australia for the more perilous climate we know is coming. The pace and nature of decarbonisation should not cause further damage to the natural world, nor should it jeopardise the food security that Australians will need and value ever more highly as the world enters a long era of climate transformation. Cutting emissions should, of course, remain an objective for Australia, but it needs to be tempered by realism about its pace and its costs in view of its marginal global impact, putting our faith and our scarce resources into the hope of becoming some kind of renewable energy superpower depends on the shaky assumption that the global economy will be immune to the disruptions of climate change and that growth will sail on undisturbed. The illusion that we're finally tackling the climate problem is preventing us from coming to grips with the one thing that really could secure our nation's future, implementing a far-reaching national program to adapt Australia for life in a hotter climate. Making the nation resilient means transforming everything from where we live and the dwellings we live in to city planning, transport infrastructure, water management, farming, land management, to mention the most obvious ones. We ought to be in the best position to survive and even thrive in the new conditions we will certainly face in the decades to come. We should be ensuring that the energy transition now underway, important as it is, does not harm the landscape, waterways, forests, biota, and ecosystems that we rely on and cherish. Of course, we're not saying that cutting greenhouse gases doesn't matter. Since the 1990s, we have each been advocating strong mitigation measures, especially rapid reductions in our energy system's dependence on fossil fuels. We've watched in dismay as Australia's emissions and the world's have continued to rise year after year, even as the scientific warnings became more dire. Globally, everything should be done today to reduce carbon emissions as fast as feasible to limit warming. If you're driving into a brick wall, it makes sense to step on the brakes. However, irrespective of what the rest of the world does, we need to make sweeping plans to prepare Australia for life in a hot world, wherever climate change may land, on the scale from bad to very bad indeed. If we carry on as we are, by the middle of the century, Australian society is likely to become so stressed that the cohesion of the nation will be at risk. Fairness demands we act early. If we don't prepare together for life in an increasingly difficult climate, the rich will spend up on their own protection, while the poor and vulnerable will be left to fend for themselves. Making ourselves ready for what we know is coming, and doing so in democratic and cooperative ways, is not only common sense, but an insurance policy for social justice in times of growing danger.